Hey there, I'm Sandy Scarlatta, and welcome to the Happiness Solve podcast. Twice a week, we explore the journey to finding true happiness by sharing inspiring stories, practical tips, and insightful conversations with some of today's leading experts. But we don't just scratch the surface. We dive deep into the real grit of what it takes to live a genuinely happy life. Whether you're looking to improve your well-being, enhance your relationships, or simply add more joy to your life, you're in the right place. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into today's episode. Because happiness is a choice, and the choice is yours.
Nathan Andre, such a pleasure to meet you. How's it going today?
Hey, Sandy, I'm doing really well. I'm really glad and delighted to be on your podcast today. This is Happiness Solved. We're going to solve all the happiness problems today, right?
Tell ya, that's the game plan. All right, so for the audience, Nathan has ridden life's roller coaster. Oh my gosh. And sadly, I have two, and I can't ride a real one anymore, you know?
Yeah, scary.
But, I know. But anyway.
Maybe so after Nathan, I'll get you back on the coaster, okay?
right, exactly. So Nathan is just a wealth of information, and he's going to get into his story, but just real quick, he's a multi-award-winning author of Your Real Life, Get Authentic, Be Resilient, and Make It Count. Love it. Amazing. And I love it on your website. You say, when you get real, you don't just bounce back from hardship, you bounce beyond it. So true. I just love this. So what is your backstory? How did you get to this point? Because for me, it was like a moment where I'm like, I got to write a book about happiness. Like I just knew it.
Yeah. Right? It's kind of like that. And you know, the bounce back versus bounce beyond is a big part of the story, I think, behind why I am where I'm at. You know, I think what's interesting is that the real genesis of the story of the book and how it came about was during COVID. Everyone was using resilience, and we're building more resilience, and our organization is becoming more resilient, and we're moving to remote first. Everyone's resilient. I was like, oh, no, wait a minute. Come on. You all don't really understand what the definition of resilience is. And it isn't just bouncing back, because if you bounce back to where you started, then you really haven't learned anything. And so I was starting to like explain things to people, I was like, no, actually what you want to do is not just bounce back to where you started, but you want to bounce beyond that because you're learning something and you're taking that learning and turning that into a growth opportunity so that the next time you hit an ugly wall or obstacle or adversity that you're ready for it. So my definition, we can get into what resilience actually means, but that's a big hint as to part of the definition. My backstory is, you know, I've been in the work of human resource management for more than 20 years.
I was in human resources as well. Yeah.
Here we go. Can we keep finding stuff that we've gotten done? I love HR because the business of people is exciting, but it's, you know, people are messy. And part of the joy and the service that I bring is to enable not a cleanup crew, but tools and skills that help people develop resilience. And what is born out of the book is kind of a culmination of all of these years of experience of being a coach and being an HR practitioner and being a good listener and an empathetic human in enabling people to live a life of better well-being that comes from what I call authentic resilience. And it's the combination of being super authentic and learning about who you are and then having the tools of bouncing beyond life's adversities. And through, as you read, the roller coaster, you know, from 9/11 to hurricanes and typhoons and to the massive earthquake, tsunami, nuclear disaster in Japan. I was living there at the time, and a whole lot of other kind of little life's obstacles in between. I kind of figured out a formula of what works, and people kept coming to me saying, you know, Nate, my family likes to tease me as being the king of disasters in some ways. But you know, a lot of people come to me and say, well, how do you get through hard things? You make it look so easy. And I started to think about the origin of my own resilience. And then when COVID happened, kind of bring it full circle here, I was kind of annoyed that people were just saying we're having more resilience and not really thinking about what it is. And as I started to really think and deeply understand what resilience and the power pack of authenticity, how those two things have shown up for me and what that is. And the last part of the anchors of the book is leading your life with love. And it I know it sounds like a Huey Lewis song, you know, from the 1980s or Celine Dion, whoever you listen to, but the power of love and leading your life with love gets you to the other side of well-being, no matter the obstacle. And so resilient people, in summary, really are facing reality, managing their energy, clearly authentic, and understand who they are from the inside out and live their life with love. And when we do these four things, for me, that was the formula. And so the book comes out of this desire to share not only the formula that works for me, but has worked for a lot of my clients, has worked in organizations that I've worked at. And it's really a gift to the world to say, hey, you want to get through some hard stuff, pick up your real life, because there's some real golden nuggets in there that come from real stories, real people, real lived experiences. And when COVID happened, like I said, let's come to the other part of the definition. Resilience was not just a buzzword. For me, it's a life action. It's a life force that enables me to get to happiness and enables me to get through life's ups and downs and adversities. And so when I think about the other part of the definition of resilience, it's taking back control. We're all in control. And when we take back control and then we're learning from the things that we gain, that's why I said there's a learning component. That is where resilience is the true definition of resilience. And when you combine that with authenticity, boom, we get to enabling ourselves to get through anything that's really hard.
Mm, gosh, so true. Let's start with reality, because I think that is an area where a lot of people just don't want to face. And I'm not saying necessarily that making a mountain out of a molehill or what, you know, whatever. But for me, when you talk about the reality, it's like, you know, so often people go around in life with blindfolders on. And for those just listening, I've got my hands up, you know, I use that a lot, like racehorses. When you look at a racehorse, they've got the blinders on and they do that for a reason, because they only want that horse to see in front of them. Mm-hmm. They don't want them to notice that there's a horse next or what, you know, they want them to just stay focused straight ahead. But we can't live our life that way, because you've got to be looking at the big, you know, the windshield of the car, right? And a lot of people don't want to face that. So what do you have to say about the reality part? Can you just give us a couple of tips that you use in the book, maybe? Yeah.
Yeah. I talk about what I call the reality curve. And when we think about the hardship or obstacles, the easiest way to face reality is to lean into the reality curve. Authentically resilient people move. And think about it, visualize a J curve. You know, when you hit the obstacle in the road, the first thing that you want to do is to acknowledge that you've hit the obstacle in the road. Right. And as soon as you acknowledge, you start to slide down that J curve to the bottom of the curve. That is what I call the slope of suffering. Okay. And that slope of suffering on the way to acceptance is a big part of where resilient people have an advantage. The advantage is that if you move from acknowledge to accept quickly, you're going to move through that curve very, very fast. Because the upside of that curve from acceptance becomes two more parts. The first part is what I call advertunity, which is where opportunity and adversity collide. Advertunity. Mm-hmm. And if you're using a growth mindset, advertunity should fuel the action that enables you to get up and out of the obstacle. So it's four A's component. It's firstly, acknowledge, accept, advertunity to action. And if you visualize that J curve, resilient people, when they're facing into reality, acknowledge it and move to acceptance very quickly. They apply their advertunity growth mindset, and quickly they've got an action plan to they know how to solve. And when you think about reality, people get stuck because they never get to acceptance. They're stuck in that downward slope of suffering. This is what psychologist Martin Seligman, he's the godfather of positive psychology here in the United States, basically said, we can learn helplessness. And learned helplessness is in this slope of suffering. And suddenly, if you think you've learned how to be helpless, well, that leads to hopelessness. And there's other psychologists talk about the spiral of suffering. It's just hopelessness breeds more learned helplessness, and helplessness breeds more hopelessness. You suddenly spiral down. And so when we're thinking about how to face reality and spike ourselves out, resilient people move from acknowledge to acceptance really quickly. They get out of that slope. They say, okay, some shit has happened. I can say that.
It's okay. Yes, you can say that.
Crap has happened. I need to accept that the crap has happened. What's the dark side of the crap that I can then put an action plan to? And that brings us right up the curve to then the next part of the model, which is really about energy and where we want to put our energy. But a lot of people put their energy in that slope of suffering, and they stay in that slope of suffering, and they stay stuck. This is where a lot of my clients come to me saying, help me get unstuck, Nathan. And I say, the first thing is like, okay, let's face reality. Let's get real in that way.
Right. Yeah. Because also reality is also taking responsibility, accountability, you know, whatever word resonates with you. But that's really kind of what you're saying too.
I'm hoping that by the time people get to acceptance and they've actually accepted the fact that something bad right. or hard has happened, that they're already thinking about looking for the bright spot, that opportunity.
Right.
Because when they do, that's where accountability can show up. You say, actually, I'm in charge. I'm going to take control back. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Resilience is taking control back first. And,
right.
and
okay.
that's what happens at acceptance. As you move up that curve again and you're thinking about the advertunity and the action plan, that's where you're applying the learning and the growth of what you've had to use before in order to face into the next thing. You're applying that learning and taking control back at the same time. They go together in that way.
Love it. Love it. All right. So energy. So for me, when I see energy, I think of frequency.
Okay.
Right. But regardless, however you define it, it's really all the same thing. So when you're talking about energy, what specifically do you mean, and how can people apply that to their situation?
That's a great question. I think of energy in four domains, as if they were almost
okay.
like well-being batteries. And I
okay.
use these four domains to help people understand where they want to, firstly, recognize where their energy comes from, what drains their energy, and then how to focus their energy. Those are the key ingredients here. But the four batteries that we all have around energy and how they get drained or how they get charged up and how we focus them are our physical energy. We have to think about that. That's the obvious stuff. That's diet,
yeah.
exercise, it's food, nutrition,
sleep
for sure. These are the six key ingredients
right.
to physical energy and recharging those batteries. And when your
right.
batteries are down, it's because maybe you didn't have those things. The second well-being battery really is about emotional charge and how
right.
we monitor and how we know about our emotional selves and how we monitor and control, self-regulate those emotions. And that's a second battery where it can, if you're completely drained, you can have different reaction to adverse moments than when you're fully charged up and feeling positive. Third battery I talk a lot about is your mental battery. Now, people often forget about this one because we use our brain. Our brain is this massively important muscle, and organ in our body that is constantly being in use, even when we're not consciously thinking about it.
Yeah.
But the brain, not to get into too much of the neuroscience, there's a little bit of neuroscience in my book. I'm self-
Well, I think it's important. It's important.
Yeah.
It's because it's education. Knowledge
yeah.
is power. And understanding the neuroscience is important for people.
Yeah, the brain is
yeah.
is a mysterious and both a beautiful way and but in a way that is of wonderment and awe. But that left hemisphere, right hemisphere, they're connected by the prefrontal cortex. That is your central processing unit for your brain, and it's also in your brain. Your mental energy is what controls your ability to forecast the future. It's what enables us as humans, as the only species on the planet, to ruminate about things in the past.
I know. Right.
Yeah. Lucky us.
Can you take that away? I feel like I wake up in the morning and I'm thinking about something that happened a month ago. And then I catch myself. I'm like, stop.
Yeah.
It's back there. Stop.
Yeah. can't do anything about it. But we have this unique feature as humans.
We do.
It's also how we, where in our brains that we manage time and where we manage space. It's how we organize thought. It's where logic and process comes from. So our brains are constantly on hyperdrive, managing all the things that we do in a day. And if we're facing an adversity or something that's extremely challenging, that mental battery of how we're organizing all of our thoughts. Have you ever come home, Sandy, at the end of the day, and you're like, I'm just mentally exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mentally exhausted is because you've overused all those capacities and faculties that enable you to chart out your day and organize your time and drive safely on the road and make sure that you take care of your kids and or feed yourself and do all the things. And then making sure that you take your medication and go to bed on time and that you've had six glasses of water. It's that all comes from the mental battery. We're not talking enough about that part.
But no, we're not.
Third battery plays a massive part into where we put our energy. Because if you're going through the reality curve, guess what? Overthinkers, analysis paralysis friends on the call today are going to be constantly processing. And that's where that drain of mental energy can come from.
Yeah.
Last but not least is the spiritual battery. Now, I think some people get hung up on the word spiritual. So let me just qualify what I mean by spiritual. Spiritual battery, in the essence of my book and my work, is not necessarily the powers of the universe or the beliefs that people may have in some of the more organized religions around a power of God or a deity or a life force. Those absolutely can be spiritual powers and guidance for many people. I like to think about the spiritual battery as the relationship that you have with yourself. And more specifically, the inner work that you do to fulfill your life purpose and the things that are meaningful to you. And when I think about that, that spiritual work, the work that you're doing now, Sandy, which is connecting people to happiness, to me, that sounds like it charges, supercharges part of your spiritual battery. You know, for me, my spiritual battery is charged when I'm coaching people in the space of authenticity and resilience. And when I'm not doing that and I'm further away in work, say in my other capacities of my life that are not in that space of, you know, working towards authenticity or resilience in service of others, my battery is less charged. So these four batteries really have everything to do with how we show up and particularly how we show up when we're facing adversity. And if all your batteries are down, guess what? Going through that reality curve is going to be a lot harder. But if your batteries are supercharged or they're feeding, and they're all interactive with each other also, the batteries.
Yes.
If they're supercharging or one is charging the other, it's going to make it a little bit easier to move through that reality curve to say, okay, acknowledge, accept. All right, I've accepted it. Now I got to use my energy to think, my mental energy and my emotional energy. I need to you know, hanker down a little bit so I can think about the action plan. You know, they fit together. And so when I think about it, I think about energy positive activities that charge and supercharge your batteries and energy negative activities that drain your batteries. And part of the work I do as a coach and part of what's in the book, Your Real Life, is about enabling people to become more aware of four batteries, what drains them, what charges them up, doing a time or energy audit. These are some of the tools that become really helpful then when you're thinking about not only regular life, but life when you've got, you know, an adversity or you've got a backache or you've got, the kid missed the bus to go to school in the morning. What are you going to do? These all help supercharge our ability to be more resilient.
I love that, the four batteries and how you broke that down. And that is such a great reminder for so many people. And I wrote down the word halt.
Halt.
That's used in psychology a lot.
Yeah.
Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Right? You can't, don't allow yourself to get hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, because those are the four areas that can really hurt you in your energy and on so many different levels, for sure. Yeah, I love that.
Isn't it
interesting
that halt connects right back to those four batteries?
They totally do. Yeah, for sure. All right. Authenticity. This is such a big one for me because I try so hard to live my life authentically. But I think that some people get confused on what it really means to be authentic, right? Mm-hmm. Because especially in a group environment, right? And even with just a relationship with your partner, right? There still has to be some discernment there. And that's where I think, you know, right now with social media and things like, you know, people will, they'll lash out. Well, I'm just being, they'll lash out at somebody and then they just say, well, I'm just being authentic. Yeah, but at whose expense, right? Are you really being authentic or are you just trying to like, so can you, because I'm guessing that, you know, I know that you're going to really lay it out for us in that book. So tell us about it.
I've thought a lot about this, Sandy. Yeah, the folks who just lash out and then claim to justify that in the name of authenticity may have a different value system at play.
Right.
And because ultimately values are the core of how we show up with ourselves and how we identify ourselves. But authenticity is, yeah, it's a loaded word sometimes.
It can be, yeah.
I like to think of authenticity in the ways that we know ourselves. And that's different. Another writer who I'm inspired by said, you know, it's great if you know a lot of things about yourself, but it's actually being yourself that is actually more important. So
yes.
In order to know things about yourself, you have to also be those things. And so how do you be those things that you think you know about yourself? Well, I call that the deep work, doing deep work, particularly knowing yourself, knowing your values, knowing your beliefs, knowing your strengths. And again, I take a very positive psychologist spin on some of the work that I do with my clients and surely referenced in the book is when we get to do this inside work, this core work, things that people can't always see, and we start to bring those things to the surface and we bring those things out into the world. You know, I've used this example often. One of my values is generosity. In fact, I saw generosity just the other day at the grocery store. And I give this example all the time. I see it frequently, but your values show up in your life. And this is how you know that these are your values.
Right.
When they resonate, you take them from the inside to the outside world and you validate them. This is what I'm saying with generosity. I actually saw this guy in front of me who was after a person who was needing help to pay the bill. And I've often done this myself where I've just said, oh, you're short like $5.
Here,
Let me pay it forward because I'm a generous
Absolutely.
Person. Well,
right.
I saw generosity twofold. And, you know, the guy in front of me sees the person in front of him who's short, I think it was $9 or something. And it was holding up the line and everyone was kind of grumpy, like, hurry, hurry, let's go.
Yeah.
What's the hold up here? And the guy in front of me says, oh, I'm happy to swipe and pay the $9. He does. And I saw it all happen. I was like, oh my gosh, way to go. And I gave that guy some love for showing his generosity for this other person who needed $9. This is what I'm saying. Your values, the things that you really value and that are core to you, they will show up in the world. And when you know what they are because you're seeing them in the world, go out and validate them, bring them back in to check in with yourself. Say, yeah. And to me, that validation came back in and clearly validated. This is what I mean to be authentic with yourself. Understanding when you say, oh, I'm a generous person. Generosity is my value. Well, go out and look for it. Because your values will show up. And if right. you were of the other type that you were discussing, you know, the lasher outer type person, you know, who's claiming in the name of authenticity that they want to lash out, well, perhaps their value is about conviction or righteousness.
Yes.
And these are different, you know, or opinion, which there's a lot of in this part of the world these days. That might be true for them. Those actually could be their value.
Yeah.
And it's not for us to necessarily judge that those are right or wrong. It's just that their value system is different. So are they being authentic? They might be. But there's also, as positive values, there are more shadow types of values. As I mentioned, you know, high conviction or self-righteousness. These can show up as values, but maybe considered shadows. for other people. So authenticity really starts with that values, core beliefs, core strengths, and getting to know the things about yourself, and ideally creating your version of your purpose statement and your impact. How do you want to show up? What do you want to do with your time?
Yeah.
If happiness, you know, is the topic of our call, how do I want to be happy? How do I want to bring happiness to other people? What is those bigger meaningful things? The first part, like I said, is getting to know yourself. The second part of authenticity is releasing the things that don't serve you.
Yes.
And probably had people on your show before, Sandy, that talk about, well, you know, I'm just going to fake it till I make it. That's authenticity. I'm just going to fake it till I make it and everything's going to be okay. And guess what? Doesn't work that way, because as we said before, your brain, the beautiful processor that it is, and your body also, the beautiful processing unit that it is, cannot fake it till you make it, because your body and your brain know better.
That's right.
So you have to let go of the stuff that isn't serving you. And this is where self-doubt, it's where imposter syndrome, it's where the inner critic can overpower you. And it's about bringing awareness to your authentic self, to saying that these things actually are not serving me. How do I let them go and bring awareness to, you know, alleviating some of the voices and some of the named challenges that we experience with ourselves, and letting those free so that our values and the things that we do know about ourselves can shine through. And so there's a know yourself and release yourself component to understanding authenticity. But last but not least is loving yourself. I think before the show, we were talking in the green room a little bit about my trifecta of self-love.
I know. I wrote that down. Yeah. We got to talk about that. But let's pause for 1 second. Yeah. Because there was just a couple of comments, because like you, I'm a talker. I gotta get my rebuttal in here.
Yeah.
Yes, and you have some water. You have some water. So, yeah, the authenticity thing for me is just really, and you mentioned this, you said this over and over and over, but it's just like, how do you show up?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And who do you want, right? And it does go back to the values, because if these are your values, but yet that's not how other people are seeing it, like you think, well, this is who I am, but that's not how you're showing up in the world, because you're not really, you're too worried about what other people think of you, or, oh, you know, I've got it. You know, I started doing this a few years ago where I was like, if I'm just, because it started during COVID, where that shifted everything for everybody. And I just realized that, like, you know, my husband and I weren't going out as often. Mm. And then I would notice that I would go out and I'd see my girlfriends and they're just all decked out. And I'm like, oh, are you meeting your husband later for dinner? No. I'm like, oh. And like for me, like I'm not going to get all decked out for my girlfriends, because I really don't care what they think. And so I stopped it. I'm like, I just show up how I am. You know, if I'm going to put on heels, and, you know, I always wear makeup anyway. That's, I always have, always will. But like, you know, only if I'm on camera now. Like now, I used to not ever go to the grocery store because I'm like, oh, I got to have makeup now. You know, yesterday I was all over town, no makeup, no mascara, like nothing. And that's taken me a lot of work. But that, I realized, like, that's me being authentic.
Mm.
It's just, you know, I don't need to go to the grocery store and impress anybody else.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, when we look at the long list of potential values, you know, how we present our values is ideally matched with how we live them and how people perceive them. And it's about, this is a big part of where resilience comes from. And particularly in the coaching space that I work with people and my clients, is how do you let go of some of that? You know, and this is what I'm saying, releasing the things that don't serve you. The inner voice or the inner critic that says, oh, I have to have this makeup on, or I have to be all dressed in this way. That's a, you know, that goes to this thing that we have as humans. Another special feature of being human is we got a lot of them.
We do. You know, aren't we lucky?
Yeah. You know, is our negativity bias is this thing that it lives in our amygdala. It's the threat sensor that keeps us safe. It's why we've been able to evolve as a species. It's why we're now today and where we are. We kept ourselves safe. And this negativity bias, though, is a constant narrative in our brains, it says, don't do this, better not do that, better do this, because this is going to keep you safe and this is what you should do. The true authentic people have tuned into that like a radar system and have dismantled that radar system to say, thanks for the information, but I'm not doing anything with that. I'm going to keep going because I've got confidence in these other values or these other strengths, and I don't need the makeup. I don't need the heels, or I don't need, you know, the hairdo or whatever. You know, I don't need the muscles. If you're a guy, you know, it can just be tuning out to that voice that says you have to have these other things.
Exactly.
Learning how to harness those voices, the inner critic, and how to release the imposter syndrome or the self-doubt, or you know, the elements of self-esteem that don't serve you, is part of the work. It's part of the deep work of becoming more authentic and understanding who you are and being, not just knowing, because you can say, oh yeah, I know that. I know I don't need to wear makeup, right? But being the person that then says confidently, I don't need the makeup, and I'm going to go out and be the person without the makeup, for example. Right. They're not to confuse or conflate. Those are things, you know, that are comforts that we have in our life. I mean, I like making sure my hair looks good, right?
And and there's nothing wrong with 50 that.
50 something years old, I still have hair. So you're like, I'm going to enjoy that.
Exactly. And like with my girlfriends, if you want to, that's awesome. You look gorgeous. That's great. It's just not for me.
And this is where judgment becomes, you know, part of the formula. But that's a separate podcast. But but you know, for those people that, and I'm not shaming or judging people that have those things, because again, those comforts are also part of identity and may be rooted in a different set of values that we haven't talked about today. You know, because there's also pride, which is a potential appearance, aesthetic, beauty, excellence. These are all very powerful values that people can also hold, which then manifest in the way we show up. But showing up and understanding how we show up is what we mean by authenticity.
Yes. Love it. Amazing. All right. The trifecta of love.
Self-love.
I want to hear this. Yeah, I love it.
Of self-love. There are three selves that we're talking about. Self-care.
Right.
Self-compassion. Mm-hmm. And self-advocacy. Now, this is the bridge from authenticity to the last part of the real model, which is the model of love. And we can talk a little bit about that at the end as well. But the trifecta of self-love is, you know, self-care. This is what we're talking about before. Yeah. How much you get sleep at night, how many glasses of water. You know, self-care is not saying, I'm going to go to the Maldives, or I'm going to go to, you know, Mexico or wherever for a recharge and take care of myself, because that's called a vacation.
Right.
Okay.
And it's fine. And I do it all the time. And I actually try to do at least one a year of those where I just do a girl, like it's for me. Like I do it like a yoga retreat or a meditation retreat. Yeah.
And that's in service of self-care.
Right.
But a lot of times people conflate doing an activity like that as the only self-care. And that's, you know, I was talking before, you know, self-care is really a practice. It is a day-to-day ritual. Mm-hmm. It's about setting those small habits and customs and routines for yourself, so that self-care is really you taking care of yourself to the best of your ability every day, so that you can live a life of well-being and joy.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine once say, it's not about getting in shape. It's about staying in shape.
Fair enough. It's about that daily routine, right?
Yeah. It's just keeping what you have, you know?
Right. That's where self-compassion comes in. And self-compassion is the second part of this trifecta. We're talking about it just a minute ago. You know, we beat ourselves up so bad. We are our own worst critics because our inner critic and our negativity bias is like always on. But if we were to show ourselves the same self-compassion on a regular basis. And one of the ways I do this is I keep I've got it right here. I keep a reflection journal, three gratitudes and three self-forgivenesses every day.
Nice.
And that's compassion. That's me practicing self-compassion. When we practice self-compassion and showing the same compassion to ourselves that we might share for an animal or for a friend or for someone who's, you know, going through an illness, or someone who's, you know, we say hopes and prayers all the time. You know, it's okay to have these hopes and prayers and self-compassion for ourselves. That's the second practice that then leads to the third practice, which is self-advocacy. It is up to us individuals to say when we need help, when we want to take a break, when we want to take care of ourselves or serve ourselves for our own well-being. You know, a lot of people, and I work a lot in mental health and well-being in workplaces. A lot of people say, well, no, that's up to the company. No, it's not. It's a two-way street. We're in charge of our own well-being. And so if you need a break, or you need a day off, or you need to take your, you know, care of somebody, then that's up to you to self-advocate, to say, hey, Sandy, you're my boss. Sandy, I'm going to take tomorrow off because I need to.
Right.
If you never ask, you know, you'll constantly be perpetuating a belief that you're not in charge. And again, resilience is about taking back that control. So by using the trifecta of self-love, you still remain in control. And that's super important. Mm-hmm. For building resilience, but also getting to the other side of well-being, which, you know, comes from that authentic power that you give yourself. So love, real quickly, I want to dance in that space. Love comes down to four key things. Leading your life with love is about forgiveness. It is about communication, what words you say and how you say them to yourselves and to others, as we've been talking about, actually. It is about building a community, because when you know, you build a sense of other people who are part of your group of caring and doing good things in the world. And also there's science to prove that when we do things together, safety in numbers, for example, power of numbers, community helps us build resilience. And the last thing, which I love, connects directly to happiness, is humor. Smiling. There is really great science. And I don't know if you've read Sonia Lubavitsky's book on happiness, but smiling, laughing, giggling, the science of our bodies actually producing movement towards humor, and the outcomes of humor and the inputs of humor actually drive us towards love and enabling ourselves to get through hard things a lot easier. And as a consequence, ladies and gentlemen on the podcast, that is the formula of the real model that gets you to a sense of better well-being and joy. But I do love the part on love, because love the part on love, because there's a lot of truth. And we're not talking about love in today's space.
No, we don't. We don't. And I remember not multiple times I've done some corporate trainings. And when I bring up the self-love, I have a talk where I talk about, you know, basically, you know, getting into your zone of genius, because I'm like, you know, high performer to the nth degree, right? And so when you're dealing with like the high performers, we're the ones that are hard, because I'm an athlete. I'm a retired athlete, professional athlete. And so we're the ones that really harden yourself, because you're always trying to like be better, constantly trying to be better. And so I just wanted to add in there, if you are like me, a high performer who literally can, if I'm not in check, I can beat myself up on a daily basis easily, just like that. It's about celebrating my successes and my wins, even if it's the little things. Like, great job. You just emptied the dishwasher. Good job. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, like whatever, you know, because at the end of the day, like when you're a high achiever, you tend to default, because that's what you were talking about, how our brain works. We default to didn't get this done. And you focus on all the things I didn't do. Mm-hmm. But what about the 500 things I did do today?
Yeah.
Right?
Totally right.
That's where I get tripped up, if I don't pay attention, right?
This is where...
Because your mind just starts going, and you gotta put the brakes on it and be like, okay, stop.
Big part of the self-forgiveness model that I talk about inside love comes from that. And the better we get at that discipline and practice for ourselves leads us to see the many things that we do accomplish during the day.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, Nathan, as I said, we could talk for hours, but we both have plans in a few minutes, so we have to finish up here. But folks, you've got to get this book, Your Real Life, Get Authentic, Be Resilient, and Make It Count. Oh, there we go. Love it. Look at that. That is a beautiful cover, by the way. Absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you.
And you can go to his website with it, which is NathanAndre.com, and we'll have that in the show notes, and you can get it there. You can go to Amazon, either one.
Sounds great.
Anything else that you'd like to share before we finish up?
I appreciate the time and attention, Sandy. And I just also want to acknowledge you for living and working in your purpose to bring so many guest speakers to your audience and enabling them to get to consider where happiness can live. And I know from my experiences working with my clients, corporate clients and private clients and coaching clients, that when you get real, you do get to the outcome of happiness a lot faster. And that's what I wish for your audience. But I just want to acknowledge the great work that you're doing. And thanks for having me on today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Nathan. I really appreciate it. I love the work that you're doing. I love having these conversations. I do this kind of selfishly because I love having these conversations. And, you know, if I picked up the Nathan, can we just talk for 30 minutes? You'd be like, I don't know who you are. No.
Call
so,
me.
You know, I had to start a show. Yeah. I have to start a show so I can actually talk to people.
Right. Brilliant. It works. It works.
I love it. All right, folks. Thank you, Nathan. I appreciate it. For everyone listening today, thank you so much. I hope that you and your family are happy and healthy and that your lives are filled with peace, joy, happiness. And let's get real, folks. Get the book, Your Real Life. Take care, everyone.